Support for WPR comes from Doulaying the Doula, offering birth and postpartum training and certification programs for medical professionals and other interested humans. More information about training is at doulaworkshop.com.
Support for WPR comes from Stone Harbor, a Door County resort and conference center overlooking the historic steel bridge in Sturgeon Bay. Details about hosting a wedding or conference are at stoneharbor-resort.com.
Well, if you've been thinking about remodeling your home, renovating it a bit, maybe there's some repair things that you'd like to check on with your home. Maybe there's some inspection kinds of issues that you're interested in, or maybe it's energy saving with the home. Lots of things we can talk about today with our guests. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison specializes in residential renovation projects. Ken, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Terrific to be back, too.
And John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. He's involved with historic restoration, water issues, also a licensed home inspector. John, nice to have you back.
Pleased to be back with you, Larry.
And you guys are pretty busy right now. This time of year, it's probably not the time to be, if you've got something you want done right away.
I've been doing this for way too long, and every year at this time, it's insane. You're busier than you can ever be, and I always worry about what it's going to be like. But I worry about that every year, so what it's going to be like this winter. So but we're pretty busy right now.
What are the kinds of things that people are asking you about in terms of what are the most common things that people ask you about in terms of renovating their home? Is it the kitchen? Is it the...
Kitchen's a big one. More space. A lot of people... I do a lot of work in older neighborhoods that people really love, and they want to stay in the neighborhood, but the house just isn't quite up to par either. It's not large enough, or it's inefficiently built. You know, a lot of houses that were built, say, before the 30s had poor closet space.
Yeah.
Kitchens that weren't very well, you know, very functional and so forth. So I get a lot of those kinds of calls. Also, in the repair area, I get calls for more energy-efficient things, windows, upgraded heat plans on their house, you know, things that we can do to cut costs on paying MG&E and so forth. So everybody's trying to save a buck that way.
Yeah, and John Freiberger, you do a lot of renovation, historic renovation work as well, and is that a busy thing for you too?
We're always busy with historic projects. We're working on one Frank Lloyd Wright building, museums, two museums in Milwaukee. We usually have 10 to 15 historic consulting projects going at one time, and many of them go on for years. We're on year 5 of one project, but you have to work so slowly and carefully, and also design things so that it's affordable for people.
Yeah.
So it takes a good deal of analysis time, but we certainly stay busy with it, and it's the part of our job that we love the most, to keep these old houses useful, improve the city viewscape.
You know, it's the same thing in remodeling just anybody's house. The more planning you do, the better off you're going to be in the long run, the more cost-effective and the better bang for your buck, the nicer the finished project when you're done. So,
well, that's really true, Ken. I'm a member of the American Institute of Architects, although I'm not an architect. I'm an associate member. But one reason that I think membership is important for builders and consultants is that the kind of help that you get from a good architect today is almost invaluable. And if we can teach people that an architect is basically an educator as well as a planner, people are going to get a so much better product if they hire a good professional, if they have a larger project. Obviously, you know, a guy like Ken who's been around for, well, since the 1930s, I would guess, from looking at him. But he certainly knows his older houses. But the larger projects we get involved in, help of good professionals is really great.
Well, Lori in Green Bay has a question for you, so let's go to Lori. Hi, Lori.
Hi there.
Hello.
My question is, we purchased a brand new spec home in December, and in March when the snow thawed, we ended up with 3 cracks in our new basement wall and water coming in. And we've been kind of going around and around with the builder and the basement contractor and the waterproofing company as to what an appropriate fix for this would be. And so I guess I just want to get your opinion as to what a fair expectation of a fix on that would be.
Okay. Well, John Freiberger?
Yeah, you really need to take a look at the warranty that you got from the waterproofing company. Usually they are either a 10, 15, or 20-year warranty, and usually they say the basement will be dry. They are the experts, but typically, if you have large cracks and you have water coming in, they are going to have to excavation on the outside of the house so that they can put the barrier on the side of the house where the water pressure is going to push that barrier tight against the wall. Just filling the cracks or applying something on the interior generally doesn't work, but it sounds like you've got a warranty, and that can be extremely helpful. You also have your, I imagine you've got a one-year warranty from the builder as well.
Right, and our problem has been is that the company that gave us the 10-year basement warranty is saying that because the grading had been inappropriate, that they are not responsible. And the basement contractor, they had filled the cracks to keep the water from running in, and their response has been to put SureDry over the cracks. And we've said that we didn't feel that was appropriate because we had water coming in at the ties as well as and as well as our sump pump has never run. And so we feel like there's multiple problems, and we just can't seem to get them to step up to the plate and resolve the issue.
That really does sound like multiple problems. Certainly the Department of Consumer Protection maybe needs to know about this. And I would assume there's probably a branch of the Home Builders Association in Green Bay.
Yeah, and I contacted them, and they said they never dealt with anything this large before. So, you know, because the cost when we... Because we finally did get somebody else to come look at it and give us a bid, and we're looking like $15,000 to.
Yeah, that doesn't sound outrageous.
That doesn't. If you are getting water in the basement and there's nothing coming into the drain tile, there's a problem. And
okay.
We see, I would say 50% of the drain tile doesn't work. Is that about right, Ken?
Yeah, that's pretty.
You know, if you can get water to run uphill, a lot of the systems work well. But
often if it's coming in through the ties, it could possibly be groundwater, and it could be grading is not right, or the gutters. Are there gutters on the house?
Yeah, there are. And the grading was what's wrong with our house is that the home behind us has a very steep pitch hill. They're way above our house.
Right.
It runs into
So, unfortunately, our property was very flat, and so that water, it's not so much when it rains, but with the snow, it just sort of all just kind of came, you know, we had basically a pond in our backyard.
Yeah.
So.
But the idea of a good waterproofing system, Lori, is first that you have a barrier. And that barrier keeps the water out. And secondly, you have a collection system that breaks up the hydrostatic head pressure so that it drains the water away from your wall.
Okay.
It sounds on your house as if both of those have failed.
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
if we're looking at $15,000, I think the next thing to do is to, you know, call your attorney.
Oh, we did that. And that's been a real slow process. So that's why.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just wanted to just make sure that, because we've asked for them to put in new drain tile and to redo the water barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been told that that's too much of an expectation.
Well, one thing that you could do about the drain tile is that there are companies that can put a camera through your tile and see if they're full or run a...
Yeah, we have spider webs in ours.
but you know, these are plastic perforated tile tubes, basically, with a membrane over the top of them. And sometimes they'll put them in without the membrane, and it'll fill up full of silt, and then they won't function anymore.
Yeah, and ours is, we don't have that. We have that new kind, because my husband dug all the way down by hand, believe it or not.
Hmm.
And we have this new form where it's part of the form. It's not the old kind of drain, you know, the piping with the holes, and then it's part of the form of the hot basement, and so it's very flat and it's like a rectangle.
And I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah,
with that
and
product,
so we're kind of wondering if that isn't part of the issue as well.
Yeah, part of the issue with the form ones is often they have zero pitch. So
right, exactly.
If the sump pump's on the south side of the house and the water's coming in the north, it really doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
So it sounds like you did not get what you paid for. And maybe they think your expectations are too high, but maybe your expectation should be that they shouldn't have been paid that last $15,000.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, sometimes these are things where a mediation or an arbitration is indeed helpful. I mean, the reason people give warranties is it is an expectation.
Yes.
Oftentimes I've heard, maybe not in this situation, but I've heard it with telephone companies, the long distance versus the regular. One company blames the other one, and the other one blames the other one, and you're sort of stuck in the middle here.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also, I don't know if it was John or Ken mentioned, contacting the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection hotline. There's an 800 number, and I would, and I can't think of it off. Jim Packard will probably come up with it for me in a few minutes, but so you can stay listening. But I'd definitely call them as well. Sometimes a call from the consumer protection folks has some impact as well. Mm-hmm. And probably you need to kick your attorney in the butt and get him or her going too.
Well, one last thing though, if your general contractor is like most general contractors, they're really in the process for you, and they should be able to put a lot of pressure on the specialty contractors to get the job done correctly. So,
yeah,
you know, Spence, I don't know if you've talked to your general contractor in great detail about it, or are going right to the specialty contractors, but you know, a lot of times
done both, and he's really thrown the general contractor just sort of threw his hands up and said, "This, I expect the basement guy to take care of this," and the basement guy who
they're just pointing fingers at each other.
Yeah. And that 800 number, by the way, is, Jim gave me the number, but then he put a little screen over the top of it, so I can't read it. So I tell you what, stay listening, Lori, and we'll get that number. It's an 800 number. We'll get that for you in just a minute. Get a pencil ready. Now I have it. It's 800-422-7128. 800-422-7128. That's the Office of Consumer Protection. Good luck. Thanks for calling. Jeff in River Falls. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, you have the power to make or break me this morning. I'm expecting to get the answer I want, because if you give me the answer I don't want, my wife has a lot more work for me to do. And I know she's listening.
All right.
We just took up some old carpet downstairs. It's a house built in the 1960s. I'm guessing the carpet's been there between 15 and 20 years, although I'm not entirely certain. And we found some tile underneath there, which we didn't think much about. And we got to cleaning it up and getting ready for the carpet layer to come in and put some new carpet down. And we discovered a spot or two that were compromised. It looks like somebody maybe has dropped a heavy object and shattered, about a 5-inch diameter is the biggest one, and there's one or two other little chips is all.
Are you talking ceramic tile?
Ceramic tile. Well, I don't know what kind of tile. That's okay. What spooked us, and that's what, so we got to thinking, gee, maybe we should ask about what this is and what we're dealing with and whether we've already, you know, done some kind of damage that we shouldn't have in sweeping it up and, you know, because of the asbestos concern. That's our main. Our plan was simply to clean it up, put some new carpet right over the top of it.
Is it like a commercial tile, like a linoleum, or is it more like a ceramic or a hard material with mortar around grout edges?
No, it's just 9x9 tiles that have been laid down side by side, no grout or no mortar between them or anything.
Mm-hmm. That certainly does indeed sound like vinyl asbestos tile, VAT. Mm-hmm. The bad news is there's asbestos in it. The good news is it's really difficult to cause asbestos pollution with it. But one way to cause asbestos pollution with it is to drill holes in it, like to put in new tack strip for carpet. Generally, it's pretty easy to remove. You may want to check with your local Department of Sanitation. The last time I checked here locally, you could actually double bag it and put it in the trash. It was considered that safe. You could actually take it up yourself. But it's always good to check and see what the regulations are. And, of course, we're assuming it's the non-friable form of VAT that isn't a problem. You may want to check with a local asbestos abatement contractor up there. Very often, this can be removed fairly inexpensively. Mm-hmm. I've seen people take it out for $2 a square foot.
One problem that you might run into is sometimes the glues themselves, the adhesive they used, had asbestos in that. And so, I remember in the early days, before we realized it was a problem, we would chip this stuff up and then grind off the glue, and you know this asbestos is flying all over the place. But you don't want to do that anymore. Another possibility is if there's only one or two small spots, small areas that are, broken or
compromised
loose,
somehow.
Compromised. Mm-hmm. You can have those removed, and then use a floor patch filler if it's a dry basement, and go right over the top of it and leave it.
Okay.
So
well,
you know.
I'm going to go for the gusto here. It sounds like pretty good news, but I'm going to go for the even less work possibility. the carpet guys themselves, though they haven't seen it yet, I'm just talking on the phone. I did talk to one fellow from the DNR who was, he hasn't seen it, but seemed to think that there would because it was a clean break. Now, there was obviously a little bit of dust and some old, before we thought of it, we had swept that up and put it, and just, I think we double bagged it and threw it away anyhow, so it's not, I don't think there's any problem with that. Mm-hmm. But they seem to suggest that just filling in just the broken spot and go ahead and put the carpet down was a fairly common procedure.
Well, that's what I was just saying.
Okay.
Just fill in those areas. If there's anything that's loose, you want to be careful with that if you have to take it out. But yeah, use a carpet, or there's a floor patch that you could spread out. You mix this material with water and spread it out. Dries in about 5 minutes.
Right.
And then
the leveling compound.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, just make sure, Jeff, that when the carpet guys install, that they don't drill any holes in it and create any dust. Mm-hmm. Either use existing tack strip or an adhesive applied tack strip, which is pretty hard to get, or a glue-down commercial carpet, but just so you don't do any further damage to that floor if you're going to leave it in place.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg, our guest today, Larry Mueller here, Jim Packard, our producer. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation, repair, and inspection issues today with Ken Adams of Adams Design and John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates. Give us a call. We have an open line. Get you on fairly quickly at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Joya in Fitchburg, you are next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question for these gentlemen.
Okay.
We are planning to replace the old carpet at the front entrance of the house and also the stairway. And I was given three options. So, you know, the front entrance, the stairway, they told us to keep, you know, and you put a new carpet in, you know, which is called stair carpet. But the front entrance, three options are either tile or laminated, you know, vinyl, or pure wood. So what is the best thing? Because it's a moderate traffic area.
Mm-hmm. Well, you come in directly from outside?
Yeah.
Joya? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times people will choose ceramic tile or another type of tile like slate or a glass tile in the front entrance because it's easy to clean. And it can absorb, or not absorb, but it can handle being wet quite frequently. Carpet tends to wear out right there. So we, a lot of times we'll do that. Vinyl can be fine, too. It doesn't quite have the life expectancy of tile, but it's a little bit less expensive. If it's a moderate or a light use, you can do any one of the three. So basically whatever fits your budget and is aesthetically pleasing to you.
Which is the least maintenance, though? I was told, because we're senior citizens and we're in you know, 70s. A friend of mine suggested tile is too much work for us.
Tile is less work, isn't it?
Tile can be more work if it's in an area that gets wet all the time, like in a base of a shower or something. But tile would be a very small amount of work. You wouldn't have to do much at all, but wipe it up once in a while and look at it every couple of years to see if any of the grout's breaking out. Vinyl would probably be the least amount of work, although its longevity wouldn't last as long, basically.
Okay.
But it'd still get, I mean, if you're in your 70s, you don't have young kids running around playing with their toys on it, you know, it'll probably last well past any point while you're care anymore.
what about wood, sir?
Wood's nice, too. Wood has some of the same problems as carpet. If you get a lot of moisture on it coming in and out of the snow, it's a little bit harder. It's a little bit harder on the wood.
Okay. Can you get a laminated vinyl which looks like a wood?
Well, there's all kinds of floors. You know, there's also the floating, like pergo-style floors that you could use, too, and they can handle a little bit more moisture. I don't really like them quite as much in an entrance way because they do float and they do have joints and they're really hard to repair if you do get damage to one of them. But if you want a wood look, if you want wood, there are certain species of wood that's better than others for front doors. Certain like high-quality maple floors can handle more water than, say, red oak. things like that. So a good hardwood floor installer or a flooring supplier could give you some very good information on that. So if wood is fits your aesthetics and that's what you'd like, I wouldn't shy away from it. I would just be cautious about what kind of wood and what kind of finish you put on.
Okay, mm-hmm. If it's a wood, then it should be old, maple kind of wood, right? Instead of red oak. Is that what?
Well, maple is one of the woods. Maple is one of the woods that has a closed grain and it can absorb a lot more moisture. That's why butchers used butcher block. Mm-hmm. Used maple for butcher blocks because it didn't absorb a lot of the bacteria in beef blood and stuff like that. So it can handle a lot more moisture than oak.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I kind of like tile myself.
I do too.
In an entrance way, and it really is easy to clean. We have that in our entryway and like it an awfully lot. Tom in Wauwatosa, you're next. Hold on a second here. Let's get to Tom. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call, Larry.
What can we do for you?
Well, I had one quick comment about, I believe it was Lori, the first caller, with the foundation issues. Mm-hmm. The former drain tile that it sounds like her contractor used, if the crossovers from the outside tile to the inside tile weren't properly installed, that could be the problem. She said her sump's not running. But she's getting all that water, so that was just a comment there. And then I had a question for the gentleman. I have a 1920s four-square duplex in Wauwatosa with the beadboard soffits,
mm-hmm.
and they are popping, and I've got all kinds of, they're falling apart on me, and I want to repair them to stick with the style of the home. I don't want to cover them with aluminum if I can help it, but I'm having trouble finding a contractor.
Well, I don't know why. I mean, any contractor
they're all shying away from it.
It's just your beaded ceiling board,
yep.
probably 5/8 or 3/4 inch thick with a bead in the center. It's not that big of a problem. What I'd be more concerned about is why it's starting to move off. Do you have large sweeping overhangs on this four square?
Yep.
And did you have water damage on? How old's the roof, for example?
Mid-90s. Okay. I've been in the home for 5 years now, so the roof was replaced before we bought it, but I believe they had some issues before they replaced the roof.
Uh-huh. So that might have been the cause of your soffit problems?
Yeah. I'm not having any water issues now, but now I'm getting, the birds.
Yeah, of course, if it's falling apart. Well, there's two things finding a contractor, I'm surprised because... I know there's a lot of good contractors up in your area. It wouldn't take, it's not that hard. It's not brain surgery. It's not building a piano. So, you should be able to find somebody to do it. But the other, another thing to consider is to make sure that you've got proper ventilation in the soffits. Ventilation is something that they hadn't done back in the 20s. And depending on how your attic is insulated, you'll need somebody that knows something about how... how you need to insulate that space or how you need to ventilate that space so that air can move freely.
So you've got air, mm-hmm. proper airflow under the roof. Mm-hmm. I tried Google. I tried a number of things. Is there a trade association that you might recommend I talk to? Or
well, is there a NARI association up there? Did you check with
there is.
NARI? Yeah, I think there's a NARI branch out by you. You should be able to find somebody. I'd be very surprised if you didn't. You know, the work is up high, and it's not really clean work. So it's something that somebody's going to want to. I mean, somebody's going to want to do the work, and it's going to cost you probably a little more than it would if it was a one-story building and it was easy to. Access and wasn't quite as dirty.
Yeah, that's another question entirely.
But
is cost?
Well, everything's expensive now. Yeah. It seems like, but check with the NARI people. Talk to any neighbors that you've had that have had work done. Any neighbors, friends, do a lot of good contract. I mean, most of my work is word of mouth, and a lot of the people that I know, there's a lot of great my competitors. I've got some really great competitors here in Madison, and. And a lot of our work is all word of mouth. So check with people that you trust that have had work done and go from there.
All right. Good luck. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for calling. Paul in Toma, your turn now. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm looking for an approach. I've got a upstairs bathroom that there's no access to the plumbing underneath the floor. And downstairs, I'm starting to see some spotting on the ceiling. But it doesn't line up with either the tub, the sink, or the toilet up there. So I'm assuming that water's following someplace and then getting to a place where it drips down. I notice it on the ceiling. How would I determine, you know, which part of the bathroom is giving me problems and, you know, repair it?
How old a house do you have there, Paul?
I think it's about 105 years old.
About 105 years old. And what sort of floor do you have in the bathroom? Is this a nice old maple bathroom floor?
No, it's been duplex, so it's got, I believe, carpet or, I can't remember if it's vinyl up there or carpet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Vinyl.
Well, part of it is just you're going to have to make a hole someplace.
Yeah.
And either you're going to take some ceiling downstairs or you're going to be taking flooring up upstairs. So I guess you have to figure out what your total approach is going to be. If it's 100 years old, the bathroom's probably not that old, but the bathroom could very well date from the 20s or the 30s. And you could have steel and cast iron waistlines that are developing problems. You could have old steel water pipes that are corroding. Or the worst thing, you could have copper run into steel and getting significant corrosion. If the bathroom is sort of old and not particularly pleasant, you may want to think about simply gutting the bathroom and starting over, in which case we always suggest people take off the walls, the ceilings, and the floor, insulate the outside wall, rewire it, put in all new plumbing. And very often you can actually feed the plumbing down from the second floor to the basement without opening a first floor wall. But you're going to have to come up with an approach.
I'm going to jump in and before you spend your $40,000 on your bathroom.
I was going to ask what it was
going to
cost.
I'm going to jump in and say I run into quite a few problems. When was the last time you pulled your toilet? Your toilet was out of the...
Well, I've only owned the place for a little over a year.
The first thing that I would do is pull the toilet, inspect the wax ring that's underneath the thing. I have run into so many problems where people have the wax ring. They maybe put a vinyl flooring on and they put the old wax ring in and it didn't seal up properly, or it sealed for a while and then rocking back and forth on the toilet, you know, just in its normal function will loosen up the ring. That could be, you know, I always look for the simplest solution first, and to me that would probably be the simplest thing to do. If you don't want to pull the toilet yourself, a plumber could probably pull it, inspect it, and replace it for, you know, less than $100, $150, something like that. And you could either eliminate that or maybe discover that you do have a more significant problem and then you can decide how far you want to go with it.
I'm comfortable taking that off. How would it be obvious if that was the leak?
It might be. You could see, you might see moisture all around the floor surrounding it. If there's vinyl on there, that could be peeling up, so there might be mold, and then it might not be that obvious, and it might be a separate problem altogether. A second one to look for is the bathtub P-trap. Quite often that either the overflow leaks, and people like to fill up the bathtub and sit in the tub and soak, and the overflow will leak, or the just the drain at the bathtub. Those would be the two things I would look at first. The third one is around the tub. Is it a clawfoot or is it a built-in
tub? Actually, it's not a tub. It's just a shower stall with like a 1.5 to 2 inch tile base and then vinyl side.
And so it's the floor of the shower is vinyl or is tile base
with grout? Yes.
And that's another thing. Now I'm back in John's court. You know, that if that's where it's what's leaking, you know, you might have to tear that thing out, because a lot of people don't know how to do a tile shower base properly. You're supposed to put a rubber membrane down and then you put a mortar bed, and it's a kind of a tricky process to do it correctly. And I've seen, especially, do you think this is a homeowner job? You think somebody that maybe was an amateur did the work, or? I mean,
no, it looks like the tub or the shower stall was installed properly.
Mm-hmm.
I did, when I first bought the place, the caulking on the inside was kind of bad, so I cut all that back with a knife and re-caulked it with tub and tile type caulk, and that's held up real well.
Good.
So it doesn't look like it's leaking on the sides, but the maybe the drain in the shower stall.
Mm-hmm. The thing about water is it can be coming in, some water could be coming into the top of the floor someplace and coming out 10 feet away, and you'd never know it until you tear it open and see. So I'd say go through these steps, look at the toilet closely, look at the shower base, the trap underneath, and eliminate things one at a time unless you're really interested in remodeling the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. And whether you go in from the floor or the ceiling, you're probably going to have to replace some ceiling.
Yeah,
one anyway, layer. Because it's wet anyway, that's so that point. Might be the place to go.
Larry, you want a job as a carpenter?
No. Joan in Menominee, your turn. Hi, Joan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Our problem is we just purchased a home that was built in 1980. It's a, I guess you call it a tri-level. It has an entryway that actually has a room, but it has a basement and an upstairs, and the basement isn't totally sunk.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
there's
right.
a full bathroom downstairs. And we found out, to our chagrin, after we purchased, and this is my husband's bathroom, by the way, went
so it's a lower
a
priority, is it?
Huh?
I'm sorry, I was just saying it was a lower priority, is it?
No, it's just that that's his bathroom.
Oh, okay.
But this is where the problem is that not that it's his bathroom, but he went to take a shower, and he found there was water all over the floor, and he pulled up the tub mat, which was in there already, and there is a 12 to 15-inch crack down the center of the tub. Now, the tub looks like it was installed when the house was built. It's one of those tub, one-piece tub and surround things. It's not a two-piece. Pardon?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So my question is there a way to fix this without ripping the whole thing out?
If it's a fiberglass or acrylic, yes, those can indeed be fixed. And they can be fixed to the point where no one will ever know there was a crack in there.
Cool.
Basically, it's sort of like fixing a Corvette body that people do fiberglass work on them. I know who to call here in Madison, but I think what you'll probably have to do, Joan, is call a couple of the plumbers and plumbing houses around Menominee.
Okay.
And they are all going to have one or two people that they recommend, because when you build a new house, somebody drops a hammer and then cracks the acrylic, and there's just constant need for repairs of the acrylic and fiberglass tubs. But unless there is a structural problem with the tub, and sometimes you will find that, where somebody really did a bad job of installation, but generally, if it's a stress crack, they're able to patch and fix those and match the color and make it basically as good as new.
Cool.
It's just going to take some phone calls to find that right person.
Yep.
All right. And the other question I have is that the toilet that is right next to the tub also rocks. Now that could be just a seating problem with the ring.
Well,
maybe
there are two bolts that.
Attached
to the tub, and you can tighten those down, but be careful not to over-tighten them because it can crack the toilet. But those can be adjusted periodically. They do tend to loosen up over time.
Oh, okay.
And because it's a basement floor, I wouldn't worry too much about it. You can tighten it down, and when it comes time to having the work done on the tub, you can maybe have your plumber pull the toilet out and put a new wax ring in.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, Joan, for calling. And Debbie next in Algonquin, Illinois. Hi, Deb.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a water damage issue, too. This involves windows and water. I have about a six-year-old house. I've owned it for about a year. And in the wintertime, my windows have a frost, and then throughout the day, the sun hits it, and it defrosts, and the water actually goes onto the windowsill. And on a few of the windows, the drywall is actually riding away in the corner where the window is meeting the drywall and the windowsill and the inside of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's a problem with the window or the window installation or how I can remedy this.
It sounds like you've got a problem that you have way too much moisture in your house.
Okay.
The first thing to check is your humidifier.
All right.
Humidifiers, frequently we find do not operate the way you think they do. You have it set at 40%, and they are running on absolutely nonstop. And we've seen this in brand new houses where the humidifier was less than 2 weeks old. So the first thing to do is check the humidifier. If you have any doubt at all about the humidifier, you should be able to follow the little copper tube to what's called a saddle valve, and there should be a shutoff, and just shut it off. See what happens with the problem at that point. The other thing to check is make sure your dryer vent goes outside and it actually blows air through it. Make sure you use your exhaust fans. And then if that doesn't do it, then you have to sort of think about, then it becomes a lifestyle issue. We had a lady with a huge collection of tropical plants, and those plants aspirated so much moisture that she had problems in her house.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and if you know, three large dogs, four children, making you know, making spaghetti from scratch every night, all of these things can put a great deal of water into your house. There's a wonderful book out there that you can order for about $26 from Building Science Corporation in Cambridge, Mass, called The Moisture Control Handbook, written by my friend John Carmody and Joe Stilbrick. And you can call most bookstores and look up the Moisture Control Handbook. Joe's name is spelled L-S-T-I-B-R-E-U-K. Nothing like you pronounce it. But it's a great book. It was written for contractors and for homeowners that have excess moisture problems in their house. And for $26, you can be the smartest person on your block regarding interior air quality. The other thing that you may need to think about is when your house was built, it probably has an outside air intake for the furnace in the winter. I can't remember when the code changed. But if the house is wet because of lifestyle, you can look at putting in a heat recovery vent system. That basically is an exhaust fan that's going to blow the humid air out of your house and it's going to bring in dry air from the outside, but it's going to take the heat from the air it's blowing out to warm the air that's coming in. So in the middle of winter, you're not bringing in 0 degrees air. So I would start by checking the humidifier. If that's not it, I would buy Joe's book and start working through things. And if that doesn't do it, you may need to take a look at a heat recovery vent system so that you can dial up the humidity and the air changes that your house needs so that you don't get condensation on the windows.
I have one question, Debbie. Does this happen to most of your windows or one window in particular?
It happens to a handful of windows. It doesn't happen to any of the windows on the east side of the house. It happens to windows on the north side of the house,
yeah.
and the west side of the house.
Yeah, that's
the colder sides.
Then John's advice is really sound. I was just wondering if it was just one window, I would say, well, maybe there's a problem with that window. But
nope.
So it's not the windows; it's me.
You're putting out too much moisture.
Your humidifier, or you're putting out too much moisture on your own.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Deb. Thanks for calling. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a home renovation, repair, or inspection question for our guests today, Ken Adams and John Freiberger, feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Let's go to Dean in Appleton next. Dean, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Say, I have a Cape Cod house that, two-story, of course, that has one bedroom upstairs with a real musty odor, and I'm not sure how to identify it, what it is, or where it's coming from. It just seems to be, you know, in the air and from no particular, you know,
reason. And the room right next to it is fine?
Yeah, exactly. The rest of the upstairs is fine. And when we first bought the house, it's about 50, 60 years old. When we first bought the house 5 years ago, we replaced the carpeting pretty much throughout upstairs because it was very old. And we replaced carpeting and pad and everything. So I don't believe it has anything to do with that. But it's just that one room, and I don't know if it's a moldy smell or what it is, but it's really odd.
Dean, is there a difference between how it smells in the winter and summer?
No, I think it's the same. If I recall, it's that smell persists, you know, regardless of the season.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you've got a Cape Cod, you've probably got the little knee walls on the second floor, you know, like 3 or 4 foot high walls where the roof comes down. Is that the case?
Yeah, yep, that's right.
Do you have doors where you can look behind those knee walls to see if there's a problem with condensation or humidity there?
Oh, you mean that lead out to the what, the soffits or whatever?
Yeah, that little space behind the knee walls.
Yeah, there's actually a little closet that goes out to that area, and that's unfinished, and I can see what those things are called, the soffits or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Is it smelly in there?
No, it's not.
It isn't.
Because that was one of my thoughts, too, is that it might be moisture coming in from there. But now I'm thinking maybe attic, above the... because we do have an attic above.
Yes, right. And do you have an access to that small attic?
No, I'm almost... Yeah, I do, but I'm almost afraid to go up there.
Yes, well, the extremely large squirrel colony that's living in your attic, Dean, could be the reason for the musty smell. But I think if it isn't behind the knee walls, you are going to have to look up in that attic.
Okay.
It sounds like you said you had soffits, and it sounds like maybe the soffits are vented so that there's some air circulation behind the knee walls, so it isn't smelly. But you better check up there. It could indeed be animals. The squirrel colony is only half a joke.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Cape Cods will have a little gable vent right under the roof, and sometimes if those don't have screen, you end up with squirrels in the attic, and squirrels over time can leave enough droppings and things that can get sort of nasty.
Hmm.
So I think maybe access that first, and maybe the venting up there is inadequate too. So I guess take your flashlight and your nose up there and see what you find. It certainly doesn't sound like it's an indoor air quality issue.
No.
Nope.
Yeah, and it's not generalized, so my guess is that the answer lurks in that dark space.
Okay, well, I'll have to get up the courage and
take a big flashlight.
And do what I do. Send my wife up there.
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks, Dean. Lisa and Madison, hi to you.
Hi. Monday I am blowing, somebody's going to be blowing in the walls of my house.
Insulation.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be cellulose or if there's any other material. And my question is, my next step is I want a side. And I'm wondering, is it best just to leave the original cedar siding and side over that, or take off the cedar siding and then put that R value of, the pink?
Polystyrene? Yeah, either polyurethane foam or polyisocyanurate sheathing.
Yeah, and then the vinyl siding, or just to keep the cedar siding, Tyvek it, and then vinyl siding.
Well, how old's your house?
1930.
It's okay.
The Cape Cod.
Okay. And do you have large overhangs on it?
No. Yeah, that's very short fascia.
Yeah, that's typical.
Why did they do that?
Well,
Great Depression?
It's part of it is they did that in Cape Cods, and they also did in the 30s, and they also just after the war they built a lot of houses with very small overhangs, and part of it is to save materials.
Yeah, and not think about the foundation down the road though.
But there's conflicting stories on insulation now. Some people think that if you blow foam into the cavities, or not blow foam, I'm sorry, blow cellulose in there and do a very good job, that's enough. And then what you want to do is put a building wrap on the outside and then side it. I feel that if you do that, that's good, but you could also, I think it's better if you can warm that wall up even more. And so my feeling is that go ahead and put more insulation on the outside. You can probably get half-inch sheathing on the outside of it. The problem that you have there is that you can actually get moisture that's stuck inside the wall if moisture works its way in from the inside. So you want to be careful that your inside has a good vapor barrier, and that's basically plaster and paint on the edge of your house. You want to make sure there's no openings in there.
Mm-hmm.
This is John's expertise, so I'm going to refer to him. He knows a lot more about this stuff than I do. But I do say that if you can get more insulation in there and keep the wall from getting to the dew point, from getting cold, then you're not going to have a moisture problem in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
John?
Yeah, I really agree with Ken. I think taking off the old siding and then putting a urethane, like a Thermax sheathing or something on the exterior, and then also a really good water barrier and wind barrier over the top of that, you're going to, if you just put high-density cellulose inside the wall, let's say it's high-density cellulose and they do a great job, you're probably going to be an R13 to R15 for the entire wall assembly, you know, including the plaster, et cetera. If you can add R3 to that on the outside, you can be up to R18. And that,
you mean the pink board? What I think of?
This would actually be a brown board. Take a look at the R factor per inch.
Okay.
And usually a urethane insulation is going to have the highest R value per inch. It's also going to be a closed cell system.
Okay, and take the siding off, right?
Yes, take the siding off. Now, you've got a Cape Cod, so it's not like you've got a huge amount of siding.
And I don't have much to work with because the roof line, you know what I mean?
Right, because you've got a lot of roof, and you don't have, especially the front and rear of the house, you don't have a lot of siding, although you do on the ends. The other thing to think about is using something other than vinyl, a little bit higher quality material, be it hardy plank or something like that. That vinyl siding has a more limited life. The hardy plank you can get now with a 15, I think even a 20-year warranty on the color and the paint. You've got a wider selection.
What is that called?
Hardy plank. Two companies make it. The James Hardy Company have a very nice website.
Okay.
And is it H-A-R-D-I-E? Ken, I can never remember. Or is it?
I don't think there's an E. I think it's
H-A-R-D-I. H-A-R-D-I. Hardy,
so.
Yeah, so type in Hardy, James Hardy Company. And the other one is the CertainTeed Company makes a product called Weatherboards.
What's the composite of that?
It's basically Portland cement and fiber. Remember that old asbestos siding you saw on a lot of Cape Cods from the 50s that lasts absolutely forever?
Yeah.
That's what this stuff is.
Okay. It's
except there's no asbestos in it.
Yeah. It's weatherproof. It's animal proof. I think it's small arms fireproof.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's hardy stuff. So.
Okay.
That's what we're putting on our house.
Okay.
Or Ken's putting on, as a matter of fact.
Right. Then the other thing that you need to think about, Ken, is Ken's mentioned vapor barrier, and he's very correct. You need to determine whether you have enough paint on the inside wall so that the walls are basically vapor impermeable.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's usually a HUD paint, right?
Yes, there are HUD certified vapor barrier paints you can put on, and then any openings need to be sealed. So where you've got the outlets, you need to put those little gaskets on.
Okay.
If you do all that, you'll keep the inside of that wall dry. You'll get up to an R18 or R19 wall system. You'll be basically windproof. The other thing they'll be able to do if they take the siding off is it really can be able to detail carefully around your windows so that you get no drafts around the outside of your windows. You might still from the sashes, but you're putting a bunch of money into this already, Lisa, and I think you really want to optimize the thermal efficiency of your house, and maybe it's going to cost you 20% more, but if you get 30-40% better thermal efficiency and longer long-term maintenance costs, you're doing great.
Yeah. Are there higher grades of cellulose blown in that I need to look for? Or?
Well, there's different techniques of blowing it in, and when they talk about high-density cellulose, basically they're packing it in more densely.
That's what you mean.
It's a dense-packed cellulose.
The technique versus the product. Okay.
Yeah, and there's only so much you can do when you're drilling a hole and blowing it in that way, but they can do a pretty good job. Have you done anything like an energy audit on your home?
Yeah, that was all done.
Oh, okay. It is. So you're going to do one after it's done
a
blower door test. Yeah, and then that'll also help find any flaws that the contractor may have missed, and make sure that's documented.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, good luck to you.
Thanks for calling. Char in La Crosse, your turn now. Hi, Char.
Hi, thanks. I have a question about my heat pump. I have an electric furnace, and when I use the heat pump after it has come on maybe 4 or 5 times, there's a small ticking noise that begins, which eventually evolves into a very large thumping noise. This does not occur when I'm using my air conditioning, and I've had several repairmen out to the house, and neither of them could find anything. But the noise is loud enough so that the neighbors remark upon it.
Huh. Well, that's pretty loud.
Yeah, it is.
It's unusual that it wouldn't happen during the during the cooling phase because the usually the fan motor is operating. That's the thing you think about. That's the, really the only moving part that makes noise, isn't it?
And that's what the repairman said.
Have you been able to duplicate this in front of the repairman?
No.
That's the problem with these things.
They want me to call them back when I hear it and pay me $70.
Yeah.
Tell them to pay you for the privilege of finding a new problem.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's no small valve or anything that would be sticking or...
It's beyond my expertise.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry, Char.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know enough about it, about the mechanism.
But there really isn't anything else, is there, that runs?
That would be my first...
There's a reversing valve, but that... perhaps there's a problem with the reversing valve, but the technician would find that very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing would be a problem with the charge, but if the charge is real low, it simply wouldn't work. And again, that's something a technician would check.
When you hear it, have you gone outside and listened to the unit to see where in the unit it's coming from?
Oh, yes, I have.
And
it's definitely from that. I mean, I can't see down inside of it, but it's definitely in the outside, cooling unit thing. It's really, really loud out there.
Uh-huh. Well, good luck. I'm sorry we can't be more helpful.
What is the, do you know what the brand is and how old it is, Char?
It's a Charter,
A Carrier, maybe?
Carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
It's probably 10 years old.
Okay. Well, the Carrier people might have an answer to that as well. You might get a hold of them. We have to take a little break here for a look at the news, but that would be...
I think you're right, Larry. Email to the National Tech Support might help. They maybe have had other people with the same problem.
Ken Adams, John Freiberger, our guests here on the Ideas Network. We're talking home renovation, repair, and inspection issues now with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg. I'm Larry Mueller. Happy to have you listening in. If you have a question that needs answering, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's take some calls. Pat in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Pat. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on the moisture problem. We built a new home in 2005, and it is so airtight. So I did a little research on controlling moisture, and from the literature I got, some of the recommendations were really good, like to install timers on your bathroom fans,
mm-hmm.
and because it takes approximately 20 minutes for the fan to recycle the air and get the moisture out. The other one, which I feel is extremely important because I enjoy cooking, is to vent the stove hood fan. And I know I had a lot of difficulty getting the contractor to do it. In fact, they kept stalling, and finally at the end they had to vent it down. But most of the homes you look at now, they do not vent it, so all it does is recircle the air. And it's amazing how much moisture you create when you cook.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those are good tips. John Merrill used to say, if nothing else, the cheapest method was open the window. Open a couple of windows, and if you need to get rid of some of the moisture.
When it's 20 below, that sort of...
It's hard to do.
It's chilly. But that's true. It does work.
But timers on the fans is good.
I have one customer that their kids would never use the fans, and so we put a fan in that had a motion sensor on it. So whenever they walked in the room, the fan went on, and it would stay on. You could set it so it would stay on 15-20 minutes after they walked out. So. Problem solved there.
Problem solved.
It does work.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Pat. Thanks for calling. David, who's listening to us via the internet in Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, David.
Hi. We listened to you a long time, residents up in Green Bay, or actually Milwaukee area.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife likes to listen to you, and so we enjoy listening to you. We've moved to Omaha, and... into a new condo situation. They had a vessel sink here, and I wanted something that I would have a platform for all kinds of other things that I'd like to have. So I put in a cabinet with a granite top, I got a vessel sink. Now, it doesn't have an overflow in it, so I wanted to make sure the water would get away. So I put a grid drain in there so that there wouldn't be any mistake about leaving the pop-up closed. Well, this is all new construction. When I run water in this, the sink fills up with water. And if I the only way to get rid of that is if I rub my hand across the holes in the grid drain, it kind of gurgles a little bit, and then pretty soon it creates a swirl and sucks the water straight down. Now, if I run the stream slow, it'll keep up with it very nicely. But if I run the stream hard, it wants to back up again.
So you think the surface tension of the water is creating a barrier to keep the water from draining?
That's the only thing that works through my mind. I got a plumber involved. He thought it was, you know, hair or something down there. Well, can't be, because this is all new construction here.
I've never heard of anything.
It could be a little bit of air back pressure, mm-hmm. along with a little bit of surface tension. But it sounds like there may be a venting problem. There may be maybe an occlusion in the vent. Yeah, but the plumber should be able to check that pretty easily.
How is it vented? Is it a Studer vent, or is it vented up through the roof?
This is a condo unit, so I'm one of 80-something people who have this, share the system. So it's something that this plumber couldn't quite figure out. So he thought, well, maybe there's just an obstruction someplace, and gave me a suggestion about something that was...
I'm with John. I think that taking a look at the ventilation and seeing if you're getting enough air to help support the drain is a problem. You know, these drains, whenever you have a fixture, you've got a vent that up until recently would vent out through the roof, and that allows, we call them a stink pipe, because when you're working on the roof, it stinks because sewer gases are up there, but that also allows air to come in to help assist the drain.
Now that you mention that, when I took this out, there was a lot of smell that came into the room.
That sounds like an obstruction in the vent.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something, you know, if it's a roof vent, or maybe there's a coffee can over it or something in there.
Okay. So you're saying that shouldn't have really stunk up the room when I...
Shouldn't.
No, it should have been flowing out. We recently did a job where they tore the shingles off, and they found the two vents completely shingled over, cut off level with the roof. They had... Neither of them had ever worked.
Whoops.
So things do happen, David. So I would I would maybe check with the condo association and with your near neighbors and see if any of them are having a similar problem.
Okay.
And again, with fiber optics, they can actually find wherever your vent comes out and trace back and see if there's an obstruction of some sort.
So it's not really anything I might have done or could do differently on my end. It's
probably not.
Well, I mean, you're waving your hand over your sink, and that seems to be working. Just keep it
magic.
Sounds like, the beginning of a magic act.
Well, thank you. At least I think I know what I'll try next now.
All right, David. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Yep, bye-bye. Carol in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a question for you. I heard you say something about the ability to fix a crack in an acrylic or vinyl shower earlier.
Yeah.
I have a shower in our 6-year-old house, which was probably improperly inspected from the factory, and we didn't notice the problem until we were moved in, et cetera. this is 6 years old. It has a yellow spot at the back, where the back of the seat in the shower and the back wall of the shower come together. It's about 5 inches in diameter. It's kind of yellowish, and the shower itself is kind of white.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the manufacturer representative come in one time, and I had the impression from our builder that he'd be able to cut that area out and put a new area in and fix it so it wouldn't even be detectable. What he told me when he was there is, it'll probably be worse than it was otherwise, and he talked me out of that. And he said he would polish it up and it would probably be just fine. Well, he polished it up and it didn't look just fine, but he didn't want to leave until I signed a release form. And I am upset with myself that I didn't write a qualifying statement on that thing, but he wasn't going to leave, and I was alone. So that it was looking worse than it ever was. It gets darker and darker all the time, and I'm sure that it wasn't properly coded in the back, probably, when it was first, you know, I don't know if they dip them or whatever they do. I think it might be acrylic rather than vinyl.
Well, there's usually a gel coat.
Do you think there's a chance that this could actually be cut out of there? And do I have any way to go back to the company about that?
Well, I don't know that much about fiberglass repairs, but I do know that...
I think it might be acrylic. I don't know.
Well, you may
or
be...
Or what kind are they? I mean, I'm not positive.
Yeah, well, there are several different kinds of plastic finishes, but, you know, it's probably a gel coat, and gel coats can be... They can be basically painted over. With another gel coat or an epoxy-based paint.
Oh.
So I don't know. It sounds like you were... Yeah, I don't want to say anything negative about the contractor. Mm. It sounds like maybe you were being fed a line.
It sounds somebody didn't check what they were putting in before they put it in. And
well,
then,
those things happen, but there are ways to fix this. John, he was talking about this before, and I've seen people fix pretty big dings and pretty big problems in acrylic tubs and in fiberglass and in
this is a shower.
Well, but, you know, same material.
And it isn't really a ding though. It is just plain. It looks like
just a miscolored.
The second or third coat that probably would have been put on, it probably wasn't put on. You know.
I have an idea. Why don't you
from behind?
Why don't you look up in your phone book or go online and look up some people who do this kind of repair work, or call some plumbing supply companies and find out who they recommend and have them come out and give you a quote for fixing it and see what that does. Then it's up to you whether or not you want to go back to your contractor and see if he'll, you know, pick up all or part of the tab.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have talked with the plumber about it, and he's seen it, and he said, oh, gee, maybe you could get some money off on that from the company. Well, I doubt it. You know, our contractor, I don't know if he's liable. He's the one who suggested that he thought they could, you know, cut this out and redo it, and we'd never be able to see it. So,
well, good luck to you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Sorry. Things like that happen. Unfortunately, it's not always easy to get a resolution. John in Portage, hello to you.
Hi there.
What's
on
good? What's on your mind?
I've got my wife and I have an old home in Portage, and it's made out of a soft cream brick. They call it Portage brick, I believe. And from what I understand, that's a different type of brick. They were handmade. They weren't fired at as high a temperature, and you're supposed to use a certain type of mortar when you do repairs, and we're looking into doing repairs to our house, and I've gotten conflicting information on what type of mortar to use, whether it's a lime-based mortar or straight lime or a Portland cement-type mortar, which, from what I understand, is supposedly too hard for that type of brick. So I wonder if you're familiar with this or if you have any information to help.
I'm very familiar with it, and I can even send you the specifications that I wrote on historic mortars. Basically, this may not even be a fired brick. This may be a steam consolidated brick. It could be a mixture of sand and lime that was then hit with high pressure steam to bond it together. This was quite a common type of brick in the teens, 20s, and 30s. And the strength of those old bricks is compressive strength is fairly low. It's often around 800 pounds per square inch. So that if you use a Portland mortar, it can crack bricks like you wouldn't believe. So you really do want to have a lime-based mortar. By looking at the brick, you can usually get a pretty good estimate, if you've seen as many bricks as I have the last 40 years, as to how hard they are. Occasionally, we do put a little bit of white Portland cement in with the lime, but you definitely do want to look at a lime-based, a soft type of mortar for a house of this age. How old is your house, John?
As far as we can tell, probably around the 1890s, but it could be, you know, from 1860s to 1890s.
Yeah, and it's a veneer, not a structural.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So I think that's where you want to go. If you want specifications on the mortar, just email me at frei@chorus.net. Chorus is spelt like a singing group, and I'll be happy to email up to you the specifications that we've written for historic restoration. which will include information on tuck pointing, grinding, and other things as well.
All right. Excellent. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Gary in Wauwatosa, your turn now. Hi, Gary.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have an older home that's from, I think, either the teens or 1920, around there. And it's the exterior is a thing that I've been told is called permastone. It's kind of a fake Lannan stone look to it. And it's kind of a stucco or concrete with some coloring in it that kind of makes it look like real Lannan stone. But the problem is it's starting to crumble and crack in places, and I've only been able to find one contractor that really knows how to repair it. And the quote that he gave me was about $20,000, which I didn't really feel like spending right now, but I'm wondering if there's a quicker fix, like if I could patch up the cracks and, kind of redo some of it myself, or if, what's involved in the repair of something like that.
I've seen no new work done in permastone, I think, since about 1955. So you're lucky to find even one contractor who knew how to do it, because most of them are in their 90s.
Yeah, this was a family, apparently, that used to do it, and there's still, like, there's three generations, so it's been kind of passed on.
Yeah, it really is an art, and these guys could do marvelous things. They did Lannan stone, they did Tennessee stone. I mean, they could match. They could make fake almost anything. These are the arts that we had in the 19th century when people would regrain woods and all of those things, and these people just aren't around anymore, so you're fortunate to have found them. I suppose what you could do is you could hire them for $20,000 and learn what they're doing, and then you can put out Gary's Permastone Restoration Service, and every time somebody calls in here, we're going to give them your number.
Well, there you go.
But I think other than using their expert advice, I would not attempt to go at that stuff yourself. It could be beginning to deconsolidate at this point, and there are a tremendous number of ways of doing things wrong with it, so that the colors are bad, etc. One thing to check, is there any possibility your house might be eligible for the Wisconsin Register of Historic Places? Are you in a historic district, perhaps?
I'm not sure if it's actually a historic district. It's the older part of Wauwatosa, and it's Jacobus Park area, so it might be, but I don't.
Well, the first thing you need to do is call the city. You probably have a landmarks or a preservation officer at the city, and find out if you happen to be in a historic district. The second thing to do is go to the State Historic Society of Wisconsin website and look up historic tax credits, which is a great website. If you're not in a historic district, your house is probably a contributing member. If not, you can try for standalone status, and if that is the case, the state will assist you with a tax credit equal to 25% of what it costs you. So we would have decreased from $20,000 to $15,000 net expense. So take a look at that. If you have a historic home and there's something pretty interesting about it, it's the state is interesting in having those things preserved.
Okay, well, that's a good advice. I'll check into that.
Good luck with it, Gary.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. And Betty in Lancaster, your turn. Hi, Betty.
Hi. I am residing some of our house with recycled or used redwood boards. I primed the backside with latex that you recommended a couple weeks ago. The water stains are still showing through, so I painted the stains with a product called Klitz, K-L-I-Z, but the stains are still showing through. Now, I'd like your recommendation, what I should do.
Well, John just pointed at me. Thanks. I've had trouble with redwood, the oils in the redwood pushing through and keeping stains, not keeping stains, but the inability to hide stains. Have you tried something like maybe a shellac? I don't know. You can't really use a shellac base on an exterior, so that sort of kills that one. I'm going to pass this back to John.
Oh, thanks. I thought I...
But first of all, before I do, I want to commend you for recycling the redwood. I think redwood's a fantastic wood. I prefer it on my trees, but if it's, you know, I prefer it to be left alone on the trees. But if you've got the product and you're trying to reuse it, I just really commend you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would expect that what we have is we've got some resins and things that have migrated to the back surface, and so that they're on there really heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably would have been better to start with an oil-based universal primer rather than with a latex. Beyond that, without really sort of taking a look at the wood and analyzing it, it's hard to say. There are various groups that that work on recycled products. I'm not sure whether the Green Roundtable, which has a website, would have an answer for you, but you may try a little bit of web searching. Now, have you primed all of the wood already?
No, I have not.
Okay, I would.
I should reverse the boards back to the original green paint because it isn't in horrible condition.
Well, why don't you try some universal and oil universal primer on the backside and see if you have the same.
Please.
It's called universal primer, but it's oil based instead of being water based. But it still breathes, and see if that will help. The other thing, you know, if one could. This is one of these things where Ken and I are always at a disadvantage because you can't hold it up to the radio and show it to us. If you take a look at it and you see really dark, almost black sort of wave-like stains on the back, that is probably migrated resins and tannins. And sometimes those can simply be washed off. So I guess first experiment with the universal primer. Secondly, try doing a little light washing and then try the universal primer and see if either of those will solve the problem mm-hmm. for you.
Should mention Bob Falk of the U.S. Forest Products Lab is going to be on August 9th.
Oh, good.
And Forest Products Lab folks might as a Forest Products Lab guy, he might have some advice for that.
That's
as well.
A great idea because I'm sure Jim Packard will send him an email and ask him this question. so you better be listening that day, Betty.
Thank you for calling. And Gene and Ashland, your turn. Hi, Gene.
Hi. I'm really tired of the old toilets that sweat in hot weather, and I've come across some literature on the Sloan Flush Mate, and I was wondering if you have information on it. Their flushing mechanism is available in about 15 different brands of toilet, and it's a better grade than what we're usually sold for residential. It's used in hotels and dormitories and light commercial.
Is this the bowl itself, or are you talking about the tank or the flushing mechanism?
They have a flushing mechanism that's offered in several different brands, but mm-hmm. the bowl, they also have the whole toilet with a better design of bowl, and on their literature, they have a Building Green green spec product, 2004 top 10.
That's a dual flush, isn't it, if I remember right?
Dual flush?
It's a pressure-assisted gravity feed or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, Sloan's a good company, and I'm not familiar with all of their product lines, but I know that they have some pretty good stuff out there. And I know that even on the lower end, there are a lot of toilet tanks that can be purchased that have linings in them, and that helps keep them from flushing. I also know some people will actually hook them into the hot water line so that there's just the water's just a little bit warmer than the cold water, and that helps keep them from sweating, too. So there's a lot of different options out there.
Mm-hmm. And good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Ken and John, the time flew by. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. It did go by quickly, didn't it?
It was wonderful being here.
Yeah.
Well, we really appreciate it and look forward to your next visit. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, specializing in residential renovation products. Ken at adamsofmadison.com is his address. And John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. He's involved with historic restoration water issues and a licensed home inspector. And his address was frei at chorus.net. Really happy to have these guys along, and they'll be back, and we will do this again with them. Just to let you know, coming up
tomorrow on Garden Talk, Dick Zondag, who is president of the Jung Seed Company, will be our guest. Dick's always always has some great information for you, and he'll be back to do it again. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.